From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show, named Best Radio Show in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Awards for Excellence. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Bill Michaels Show on the air. We are glad you are on board today. As always, thanks so much for hanging out with us. We certainly appreciate it. I'm Bill Michaels, Radio Joe across the way. If you want to chime in with us, you can. 855-830-8648. This portion of the program being brought to you by Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. You can track us down at the Huddle coming up next week. We're going to be at Maddie's Bar and Grill on College Avenue here in New Berlin. Come on by and say hello. We would be glad to put a face to a hand and shake one and say howdy and come on out and enjoy yourself. We only have a couple of these things left. That's it. We have the one coming up in Maddie's next Thursday night. Then we're going to be at the New Berlin Ale House, which is the New Berlin Entertainment Center by the bowling alley right there. That is coming up a week from next Thursday. And that's going to round things out before we then venture off to Atlanta, GA for Super Bowl. So if you get a chance, come on out and enjoy one of the last couple of huddles we have on the docket this season. And it's all, again, brought to you by our good friends at Bud Light. Going to talk some more Packers football. Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly now joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Eric, how you doing today, man?
Everything's good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We are glad you are here. So when you heard that Matt LaFleur is going to be the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers, what was your reaction?
A little bit of surprise, only because, you know, they had interviewed 9 other candidates and some good ones, some qualified ones, and, you know, guys at different stages in their careers, different levels of experience, that sort of thing. And, you know, no other team this year had interviewed Matt LaFleur for a job. So, you know, it doesn't mean that he was a bad candidate. It didn't mean he wasn't, warmly considered around the league as a candidate. But I do think that, you know, his stock had been a little higher last year prior to the Titans struggling at times on offense. Again, I've always said that you can't judge a head coaching candidate by 1 year's worth of coordinating work. But it did feel like maybe more teams, there was a little more buzz around him last year than there was this year.
So now that he's been introduced and he is getting ready to put his staff together, we were sitting here talking in the first hour about whether or not the Packers actually should end up back in the postseason next year. I said, look, there's probably 4 games they could have won. They had a couple of penalties called against them late in the game against the Minnesota Vikings. They let the Arizona game slip away. They let the Rams game slip away. So they just couldn't figure out a way to win. Do you expect this team to be back this upcoming season?
Yeah, a lot to figure out, obviously, between now and August, right? I mean, 2 first-round draft picks. It appears a more aggressive mentality towards free agency. We'll see who has to, you know, be let go because of salary or other reasons. So there's clearly a roster that's in flux right now. We just watched the Chicago Bears win 12 games. Are they going to be better or worse? We don't know. The Minnesota Vikings probably underachieved. So there's a division aspect to it as well. But, you know, my early gut feeling is that the Packers will have a chance. I think there's one of the first good moves is bringing back Mike Pettine to coordinate the defense. I realize the results on that side of the ball weren't optimal, but I think there were some positive signs and trends towards the end of the year that, you know, he's the right guy for the job. And it's never a bad thing in my mind to have another former head coach on staff just to kind of bounce ideas off of and let Pettine run the defense, kind of like what Matt Nagy had in his first year here in Chicago with Vic Fangio, a veteran, just sort of, all right, you go run the defense, let me work on the O.
How much pressure does Sean McVay have on him this weekend? And I say that in a sense legitimately, because people are trying to find all the next Sean McVays. Well, Sean McVay doesn't have a win in the postseason yet. And if he doesn't win again this year, then he's a Sean McVay that's a fantastic guy turning a team around but can't get you a win in the postseason.
Right. Small sample size, right, 2 seasons, and obviously the Rams appeared to be pretty low when McVay took over, but they quickly changed the landscape of that team. They've won a lot of games the past 2 seasons. I do think you're right. I mean, there's at least a little bit of short-term pressure on that. you know, we might look back a decade from now and Sean McVay could have multiple Super Bowl rings, or he could be fired and working for another team. It's so hard to know because, you know, I think back to all the head coaches who had strong first seasons, and, you know, we could say the same about Nagy in Chicago. Things can change quickly. You can have two straight losing seasons and all of a sudden people turn on you. So, yeah, I do think in the short term, as far as like all these candidates that seem to have some kind of connection to Sean McVay, maybe they had a beer with him once and all of a sudden they're
right.
Getting head coaching interviews. But yeah, I think for his sake, he'd love to tell you that, yeah, we you know, we won this division. We've got home playoff games back-to-back years. We got to win the second one.
When the Packers take the field next year, I believe that Mike Pettine is going to be the defensive coordinator.
Right.
With what he had to work with this year, how well do you think Mike Pettine performed?
You know, I mean, I still think there were some things that were left to be desired a little bit. But, you know, for a team that didn't have a clearly defined elite pass rusher, their sack numbers were very good. And the fact that they had this sort of strange mix in the secondary of a lot of young guys and then some veterans towards the end of their career, you know, meshing that group together with injury issues, development, you know, I thought maybe Josh Jackson would be a little bit better in year one. You know, we're still waiting for Kevin King to kind of emerge. I think he's a talent. I really do. Jair Alexander had some great moments, and he had some forgettable ones down the stretch, too. So it was kind of a mixed bag, but I think all things considered, you know, with no real playmakers at the inside linebacker spot, Kenny Clark getting hurt at the end of the year, you know, Clay Matthews off to the rough start and then all that. I think things are pretty good. I really do. Considering everything they faced, I would say the results were not that bad.
The defensive side of the football, I think, is probably going to be the biggest ask for the new general manager in Green Bay, Brian Gutekunst. Had a shot at picking up Khalil Mack last year. They didn't go deep enough into the pond. There's really not that kind of pass rusher out there. Is there going to be any free agents that you're going to look at and say, okay, this might draw a lot of interest and there's a legitimate pass rusher that's going to be on the market?
Well, there's some really good players who could hit the market. We have to see what their respective, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence, for people, you know, who watch the Cowboys Saturday night, we're going to see a player who I think is tremendous. Now, he may be a little bit more ideally fitting in an even front, a little different from what the Packers have run, but it's not to say that he couldn't be a fit there. Trey Flowers for New England, you'll see him on Sunday, a high effort, high impact player, never going to be a 15 sack guy by any means, but somebody who constantly lives in the backfield, clearly to me at least, the best player in the New England Patriots defensive line. Those are two guys whose contracts are coming up. We don't know if they'll be franchised. We don't know what else might happen for them. There are a couple other veterans, I think, who could fit into that role, too. I would also say that this draft appears pretty strong, at least towards the top, for pass rush talent. It may not be, you know, the greatest year we've ever seen, but I think it's pretty good. I really do. And, again, I'm kind of early in my work in the pass rush. We'll start with Nick Bosa at the top. He'll be gone by the Packers pick at 12. But there are going to be multiple options in rounds one and two, I think, for them to address as far as the pass rush position is concerned on the outside. And like I said, that core and that scheme have also produced pretty good numbers overall sack-wise.
Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Addition by subtraction, I think, in the division is the fact that Vic Fangio is gone. Vic Fangio now heads out to Denver, takes over that head coaching job. Do you see this defense just kind of continuing on without Vic? Because he's been kind of a mainstay and the gruff veteran that has been kind of walking the halls over there at Hallis Hall.
Yeah, for 4 years, he really oversaw this thing. And, you know, it was not a good group when he took over. I think they so showed this slow, steady improvement. And then by the second half of last season, you saw this group kind of forcing more turnovers, making more impact plays. Not enough, but still there. And then when they added Mack in training camp in August, you know, it was the move that brought everything together. That was the one thing that they didn't have, I didn't think, was that top-tier pass rusher. And it opened things up for Akeem Hicks and Leonard Floyd. It just felt like that was a masterstroke by Ryan Pace. Now, the price was high. They had to pay him money. They had to pay draft picks to Oakland. You know, they're not picking until the 91st selection or something like that in the draft. And losing Fangio clearly is going to at least set them back in the short term. Like we were talking about with Pettine and LaFleur, you know, there was just this sense of, like, Vic has everything under control on defense. You don't have to worry about them. They had a couple poor games, but for the most part, they were exceptional. Who do they replace them with? Do they have a different philosophy? I don't think having, you know, all this talent is going to result in a huge fallback, but I do think that, you know, it's going to take a little while to sort out, you know, kind of the play calling and all that.
In the division, we know the Vikings passed the torch to the Bears. Who is the best team sitting here today? It's still the Bears?
It's hard to say. Yeah, I will say this. The Bears' schedule this year ended up being pretty easy, you know, in terms of, you know, the number of strong teams they ended up facing this season was, I think they ended up statistically with about the 31st strongest schedule. So you have to factor that in. Losing Fangio, you know, they may lose Bryce Callahan, Adrian Amos, you know, there may be changes in the offensive line. So there'll be a little setbacks in some spots. I would reluctantly say the Bears. I think they'll be considered kind of the odds-on favorite, but it would not stun me one bit if the Packers or Vikings, you know, could take that back from them.
The Aaron Rodgers controversy here as opposed to the outside world, for a long time we looked at Aaron and said, okay, he's Superman. He can do anything. Yeah. And then when he starts missing a few throws, taking some backhanded shots at the head coach, the play calling, things like that, you think, okay, maybe he's just not in sync or not in a good place right now. Did you see anything that would lead you to believe that Aaron Rodgers, for what this blip on the radar was this year, even though statistically it was really good, he wasn't Superman. Do you see anything that would lead you to believe that he is not going to return as the brash young man that can do anything and maybe be an MVP style quarterback next season?
Yeah, it's difficult to say, but I would say that I still think he's got brilliant football left. I really do. And you know, there were times where he'd miss these really easy throws, stuff that he could do in his sleep, and it almost felt like he was, you know, it was like a throw to the flat, and he would underthrow it or throw at the guy's ankles or something like that. And you just thought, you know, there was some sloppy mechanics. There was just almost a kind of a, I don't know what to say, a lackadaisical attitude, but it was just sort of the kind of thing that we just never really saw out of him. You're right about the numbers. I mean, there are quarterbacks who would give up their left arm to throw it, to do what Aaron Rodgers did this season statistically, but you're right. It didn't pass the eye test for Packers fans who had come to expect near weekly greatness out of him. And maybe that a little bit of that is unfair, but Aaron raised the bar because he's an exceptional talent. And I think a head coaching change, at least in the short term, will have that effect. I mean, you remember Brett Favre in 05 to 06. We were having these same questions about him, right? I mean, he was throwing more interceptions than Aaron was, but it was the same questions about will he ever be great again. And I think Mike McCarthy really brought that out of him 06 into 07 in that 07 season. I believe it can happen again with Aaron. And I don't know if Matt LaFleur is the guy in and of himself, but, you know, if Aaron reasserts himself, they've got great talents like Aaron Jones and Devontae Adams. I think they'll add more. You know, I absolutely think he's got that potential again.
Eric, great stuff. Certainly appreciate it. They can find you guys at ProFootballWeekly.com as well. And I know you got some good stuff coming up on the website, so hopefully everybody gets there and reads it, but we appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Talk to you real soon.
As always, there you go. Pro Football Weekly's Eric Edholm joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80-plus years they've been getting it done. Call them 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. That's 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. Again, you can read their stuff at profootballweekly.com. That is profootballweekly.com. Non-sports story. I want to give you the update. Coming up next on the Bill Michaels Show.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. We'll be right back.
The Bill Michaels Show is on the air, and we are glad you were on board today. This portion of the program, well, it's brought to you by a lot of great sponsors that are going to take us down to Atlanta, Georgia, coming up here in a couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks from tomorrow, we're going to be heading down to that particular town, getting you ready for the Super Bowl, where you're going to have all the Hall of Famers and the celebrities, and everybody's going to cross the stage and say hello. And we've been doing this now, I think it's like our eighth year or something like that. And we do it every year. And we do it's a fantastic week. And again, this year, a lot of great sponsors on board. Our friends at San Giorgio, Gino. Say hi to Gino. Gino's just got a new knee. So if you see him hobbling around down there, go down and say hi to Gino. Down at San Giorgio, only Napoletana Pizzeria in the state of Wisconsin, North Old World 3rd Street in Milwaukee, right next to the Calderon Club on the corner of Kilbourne right there. You can find San Giorgio. Go in and order the Bill Michaels or the San Giorgio pizza. I can highly recommend that. Say hi to them when they do. When you go in and you get that, they pair it up with the Cider Boys from Point Brewing. Cider Boys, go in there and ask for that, or maybe at any of your local grocery stores, but go to pointbeer.com. That is pointbeer.com. Point Brewing, they have Cider Boys, and they've got all different flavors with that. It's fantastic. Also, our friends at Usinger's, whether it's from the deli or cheeses, they have it all. Party boxes, pit samplers, Northern Comfort, or Old World medleys. Usinger's, they have something for everybody. And smell it. You can almost smell tailgating. I know it's on its way. Opening day is not far off. I think it was like 76 days from today is opening day. Go to Usinger, usinger.com, and make Usinger a part of your tailgate this season. 855-830-8648. We don't do this very often, where we veer away from sports. We don't get political. We don't get too into a lot of other weird stuff, but I mentioned this at the top of the show. Jamie Kloss is the young lady that was abducted back in October. Her parents were both murdered, shot to death. The 911 call, disturbing, but they have finally found her. She is alive. In case you're just waking up, they found her in a little town just like 60-something miles north of the city of Barron, still in the state of Wisconsin, And Jake Thomas Patterson, 21 years old, he's familiar with the city of Barron, where Jamie's family lived, and apparently he targeted her for whatever reason. Now, we don't know all the details of this. They had a press conference this morning, but I just felt it was pertinent. This is a girl that everybody's been looking for, not only in the state of Wisconsin, but this made national headlines. I'm sure eventually we're going to see documentaries, datelines, all that kind of stuff on this girl's trials, tribulations, and turmoil. But her parents, James and Denise, both fatally shot during the abduction. They don't know why he chose her. At least if they do, they're not saying. But Barron County Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald has been leading kind of the charge on all of this. He did not have any criminal history. Neither he nor the town of Gordon, which is, by the way, where Jamie was found, were the focus of the investigation until Jamie apparently escaped from the house that she was being held in. Yesterday afternoon, she ran to a woman who was out walking her dog. Screamed to her, "I'm Jamie Kloss. My parents were killed." And then she was quickly taken into a home where 911 was dialed, and then she was whisked off to a hospital. She is now being reunited with her family, her surviving family. And it was something that it sparked message boards and chat rooms and conspiracy theories, and it's been all over the place. And when you start getting involved in this, because this is something my wife, followed in detail. Sherry has been, there has been so much put out there about people, ethnicities, friends, family, cars. All this stuff turned out to be not true, at least from what we understand so far. There was even a link to what was going on in Walworth County last night, where Walworth County, there was an abandoned house where two bodies were found in a burn pit, and somehow that became Jamie Kloss, and it was put out there that she was found yesterday at 11. Look, all I'm saying is let the details kind of come out in this, because eventually you're going to have a trial, so you're going to have all of the evidence, everything thrown right there for everybody to see. But there's three things really to remember here. One is, two people were fatally shot for whatever reason, seemingly for nothing, just because they were in the way. Secondly, you're glad that she's been returned, that she's safe, but this girl has got a lot of healing to do. So, and I know there's going to be media camped outside of homes. Everybody's trying to get the first interview. Everybody's trying to get the first picture. Hell, somebody said today at the press conference they're throwing a party. Throwing a party. The girl just came out from being held captive for 3 months with a 21-year-old dude. Let her settle, you know? So I know it falls on deaf ears, but give this girl a chance to grieve her parents. She hasn't even had a real chance to do that. All she's concentrated on at this point is survival. Give the girl a chance to grieve her parents and grieve her family and try to gain a semblance of her life back. In the meantime, the other thing to remember is we don't know everything here. Don't let fear of the unknown rule your life. The only thing we can do in life is be aware of our surroundings and take precautionary measures. You can't do any more than that. I mean, you can lock yourself in your home and become a fortress, but are you living your life? Don't let fear rule your life. It's funny. I was just watching a commencement speech by Jim Carrey. And I know that's not necessarily where you take your life lessons from. But there's two ways to fear, or there's two ways to live your life, fear or in love. In love with everything you do and the doors that open that you walk through and you pronounce your arrival, or you live in fear of the unknown, of ridicule, of what may or may not be out there, and live your life. Enjoy yourself. Just be precautious. You know, it kind of goes back to when I remember this same type of speech when 9/11 came about. We were on the air wall to wall. For weeks, we were on the air basically giving the same speech. Don't freak out. Get back on a plane. Do what you do. Don't let fear cripple you. And be aware of what's going on around you. And if something is out of sorts, something just doesn't seem right, make a phone call. It doesn't hurt. Nothing bad comes from, oh, by the way, I see this and it just doesn't seem copacetic in my world. Nothing bad happens like that. But it's amazing. Everybody kept expecting after the spring thaw that some farmer would be plowing his field and there she would be. I think everybody just kind of thought the worst. So I guess the most joyous news of yesterday was not necessarily the fact that the Packers have a new head coach and Ron Zook has been fired, but the fact that a young 13-year-old girl who had been abducted and watched her parents murdered was found safe. And keep that in the back of your mind. For all that we talk about in this program, for everything that we do, there's a very wise man. When I first got into this business, his name is Walt Mayer. God rest his soul. He was the chief sports director for the ABC station, Channel 12 in Cincinnati, when I first started out. And I'm sitting there at a basketball game in which Bob Huggins and Bobby Knight are coaching, and I'm sitting between Walt Mayer on one side and Oscar Robertson on the other, and I am now living my dream. I realize what I'm doing. And it is a completely surreal and euphoric moment for me. And I had these questions during the post-game press conference that I was going to ask, and Huggins and Bobby Knight, they were just tearing up reporters. So I kind of closed my book, and he leaned over to me, Walt Mayer did, and he said, never be afraid to ask a legitimate question, because what's the worst that can happen to you? And I said, well, I can end up like those guys. He said, who cares? And then he leaned to my ear and he said, one thing to remember in this business, it is all entertainment. He said, look around. It's sports, it's money, yes, but it's all blank. It's all BS. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because if this ended today and there was no more basketball, no more football, no more soccer, no more lacrosse, and no more sports to cover, Wall Street would still open, people would still go to work, we would find another means of opportunity, and this is all entertainment, and don't ever, ever, ever forget that. So what we do in the grand scheme of things, yes, we are in multi-million-dollar companies, and we have the reins to many people out there, but in the grand scheme of real life, what that girl just went through for the last 3 months doesn't compare to some of the trials and tribulations that we fret about on each and every Sunday. Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We got more of the Bill Michaels Show right after this.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back. How we looking? Bill Michaels Show is on the air. This portion of the program brought to you by our friends at Quick Trip. And just letting you know, I stopped in there today, as a matter of fact. I wanted to check out all this new stuff that they have to offer, because I got to admit, I'm not a big frappe guy and cold fruit smoothie drink guy, but I went in and checked it out for myself. They got a lot of new stuff over at Quick Trip. You can choose from over 30 different drinks, including the Caruba Gold Frappes, the Cold Brew Coffee Shakes, frozen chocolates, real fruit shakes, frozen lemonades, real fruit smoothies, made with 100% all-natural ingredients, real fruit, real dairy, no high-fructose corn syrup. Choose your drink. Choose your flavor. The machine does the rest for you. It's that simple. By the way, four for a dollar cake donuts through July 21st today. That's what's on special. Good stuff over at our friends from Quick Trip. Let's talk more some baseball, shall we? A little hot stove. We'll get back into some Packers chatter coming up here in just a couple of minutes and other things. So we got Konzo and Phil and everybody on hold. Hang in there. I'll get to you, I promise. But Adam McAlvey of Brewers.com and MLB.com joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Adam, how you doing?
Good. I'm happy to see the baseball market moving. It's been such a cold winter, I'm sure people kind of forgot the sport was there.
It is very slowly. It's kind of like everything ground to a halt, and all of a sudden the rust is breaking, the wheels are moving, you can hear the engine winding up a little bit. Everybody was waiting for the $500 million Bryce Harper deal to get done. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Yeah. Manny Machado looks like he's still going to effort off towards at least Chicago. The White Sox are making a huge push to bring him there. And everything else is starting to kind of matriculate down. Tell me this, and I'd asked this yesterday of John Morosi, and I'll ask you your perspective because you're closer to it. But did the Brewers change the pay structure in baseball via pitching last year with the way they did things?
I that may be an overstatement to put it all on them, but I would say that generally speaking, you know, the game has been going away from our traditional idea of an ace. Not that they are not important, not that they don't exist in the game. Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw, and there's, you know, plenty of really good starting pitchers that kind of fit what we grew up believing a starting pitcher's job was to do. But as the years have gone by and complete games get rarer and the average innings per start gets lower and the number of innings covered by your bullpen gets higher and the velocity of the fastballs coming out of those bullpen arms goes up and up and up, and you've just got more live arms in the game right now, it's all sort of changing, I think, the way teams view building a pitching staff. And this, you know, the stuff that Craig Counsell talks about, getting 27 outs and focusing less on the designation of starter, reliever, you know, and then within the rotation, number one starter versus number five starter. He's trying to, and he's not the only manager, eliminate that kind of a thinking and just think about how do we get the outs we need to win a game. So in that sense, I think it is, it's changing the way that teams are approaching building their staffs. And that, I think, over time could have an effect on how pitchers are paid. But again, if you are a Max Scherzer, you're still going to get yours, and I don't think you need to worry about that. But I think, you know, for the guys in that second and third tier, if you're trying to get, you know, the old $5 million one-year deal that it seems like used to be pretty readily available, maybe those are going to be a bit trickier, because instead of signing a 34-year-old for $5 million to be your number four starter, I think teams are getting more creative about how they're covering those innings with either younger pitchers that are in their system, a combination of pitchers, more reliance on bullpen arms, which typically cost you less. There's different ways to kind of go about it. So I agree with you that it's changing. I don't know that the Brewers are the first team to think of it, though.
So, because last year I thought it was a little interesting the way the market said, okay, no more 7, 8, 9 year contracts, unless, of course, you're the Cubs and you want Darvish. We're going to go a little bit shorter term, make you earn that money. We don't mind paying a little bit more as long as we're off the hook for, you know, the extended years. And, okay, we'll see what happens. And then the Brewers come along and kind of get it done with a lower budget and say, we can do this because we got a lot of great arms. We stockpile a lot of talent. Now, the other thing when you talk about the payroll, they signed Grandal. So is this team really going to be pushing the $140, $150 million mark?
Well, that's, you know, one of the, I did a follow-up story yesterday that's up there on the site now, sort of some questions I had about Grandal and what does it mean for the bigger picture. And that is one of them. Does this signal kind of a shift in the way that they're thinking about the rest of this offseason, and could it impact other moves? I don't know that you can look at it that way. I think the way to look at Yasmani Grandal is David Stearns has this theory of offseason work that you sort of check in on everybody. And it makes it difficult for, you know, our friend John Paul Morosi and other, and me and you and those of us covering the team, to figure out where they, you know, where they really view their best shots in terms of players and where they're just doing due diligence. They do a lot of due diligence. And in this case, I think they did due diligence on a player that we all thought was going to be out of their realm. And it turns out he wasn't out of their realm, and the price came down, and they're able to get a guy for 1 year when everybody thought he was going to get 4 years or 5 years and a lot more money. So I think just hanging around in some of these markets and being patient about it and not feeling like you need to get your off-season work done at the winter meetings and understanding that you really don't need to field a team until the end of March or the beginning of April, it was a big reason, you know, it was a big plus, I think, for David Stearns in this particular case. So I don't know that we should make big grand proclamations about how this means they're all in and they're going to go, you know, get a stud pitcher and spend a bunch of money and go all the way up to 150. I think this might have been just an opportunity to get a guy on 1 year that was at a position of need for you that was just too good to say no to. And Mark Attanasio has always said he'll stretch the budget for the right case, the right deal for the right player. And, you know, I think the consensus is that Yasmani Grandal on a one-year deal, even though it's a high number for that 1 year salary-wise, is the right deal and the right player.
What do you think of the Grandal signing?
I mean, I'm surprised that he signed for 1 year, frankly. And you know, there's the report that the Mets had a big multi-year offer out for him. Some dispute about just how big, but I mean, you know, $50 million plus, and he ends up signing for a little bit more than what the qualifying offer was from the Dodgers. So I think for the Brewers, it represents value, even though that is, I understand it's somewhat insane to say that when we're talking about $18.25 million for 6 months of work, but just kind of relative to what he could have cost, it looks like a club-friendly deal. This was the best free agent catcher on the market. And the thing that's interesting about him is that the fans here saw him at his absolute worst, saw him probably at the low point of his baseball life in the ALCS, where he was so bad in the field that they literally couldn't play him. And they played Austin Barnes, who's nowhere near as good a hitter as Grandal, and nowhere near as much a chance to impact a baseball game with the bat as Grandal has. So I think it is smart for Brewers fans to, you know, you're not going to eliminate that from your brain, but to sort of look at the guy's body of work, especially in terms of some of the advanced stuff that, you know, David Stearns and his team are looking at very closely. Framing is a very big strength of Grandal. And then the offense, some of the offensive numbers. I mean, depending on what metric you want to use, he's the second or third best catcher in the game offensively. And it was a career year for him, yes, but now he's a switch hitter coming into Miller Park where he's getting to hit left-handed a lot in a division with a lot of right-handed pitching. And we've seen what left-handed hitters can do given an opportunity to, you know, take a bunch of at-bats in this ballpark. And it's Travis Shaw and Eric Thames his first year and Christian Yelich, what happened to his power last year. So Grandal has an opportunity to build on that career year offensively he had last year. But it's going to take a little bit of trust, I think, from the fans to because what they saw with their eyes is not necessarily representative of what kind of player he is.
Talking with Adam McAlvey of Brewers.com and MLB.com, there is a lot of talk about fixing the infield, finishing that one other piece. Moustakas is still out there hanging around, and he likes the Brewers, obviously. That deal is not a done deal for him to go anywhere else, so we'll hang in there and wait for that. But the other, if you're starting to peer over that fence, the top prospect in the organization is Keston Hira. At what point do they say, we believe he's ready? Does he have to go to AAA and have a whole season down there? And then next year, the year after, you're looking for this? Or is this something where he's probably up here come July?
Well, you can't answer that for sure right now because that's not how teams plan these things. The player's performance is going to play a role in it. Need is going to play a role in it. And then what's around him is going to play a role in it. And what's around him, on one hand, is Mauricio Dubon, another really good prospect who would have surely played a huge role in the team last year had he not torn an ACL sort of right at the time the need was coming up for the big league club, the kind of pre-Brad Miller phase of Brewers baseball. So, all of those factors are going to come into play with Keston Hira. All we know is that Hira and Dubon are both going to begin the year in the minor leagues. That is the plan right now, barring some sort of emergency absolute need. They want to do right by this guy and prepare him for when he gets to Major League Baseball to continue to have the success that he's had in college and in pro ball so far. And look, there's lots of examples throughout the history of the game and plenty in this organization of a can't-miss prospect who charged through the minor leagues and they rushed him up to the big leagues, and he was rushed to the player's detriment. They do not want to do that in this case, and this is a player that has not taken a single at-bat at the AAA level. So patience is more and more difficult in this game, but it has to be exercised here, and the Brewers have made pretty clear that they're going to exercise it. So what does that mean for the immediate? I think it means that they're looking for a shorter-term deal with a good player. So it's that balance between, who can you get, not have to commit multiple years, but still can come in and contribute for you, whether it's for 3 months or for this entire season. And they've been looking at basically everybody on that list. Jed Lowry was a guy that a lot of people were very high on. He went to the Mets yesterday on a two-year deal. So there's kind of the rub. I think it was 2 years, $20 million. And he's a good enough player to warrant that kind of deal. That's probably north of what the Brewers want to do to solve this opening. I get the sense, I think, they would rather find somebody on a one-year deal that can be the bridge to these two prospects and give them the time that they need.
Hey, real quick, we got about 30 seconds here, but I got to ask you, because I'd be remiss if I didn't, in a 30-second synopsis, thoughts on the Keon Broxton trade?
It's all about flexibility and club control. If you look at the players that David Stearns has acquired, especially in the winners in his time, they want guys that they can have for multiple years, and they want guys with options that if there is a need to send them down because you have another piece you need to bring in, you want to do that. So that's what they got in Ben Gamel. And, Keon Broxton, a fantastic defensive player. We'll see if he can narrow that strike zone a little bit in New York and become a more complete player offensively. But I think, it's all about positional flexibility, roster flexibility, and club control. Those are the big things that David Stearns talks about in building a roster, because it's not 25 guys. You don't need 25 guys. You need 50-plus. And flexibility is a big deal when you're trying to navigate a season with that many moving pieces.
Adam, always great to talk to you, buddy. I know you answered anything, but had Eric at home on a minute ago. But thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes. Love reading the stuff. Looking forward. Pitchers and catchers about a month away, and then we're going to be down there in the middle of March. We'll see you then, too, okay?
Bill, it's 5 weeks from yesterday.
I can't believe it.
5 weeks from Wednesday. It's less than 5 weeks.
Can't believe it. I'm looking forward to it, though. This is a lot of excitement to this season. Good stuff, Adam.
See ya.
Appreciate it, pal. There you go. Adam McAlvey joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. More of the Bill Michaels Show next.
Border to border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back. Bill Michaels Show. We're on the air. Coming up here in just a few minutes, Paul Immig, our green and gold analyst, is going to be joining us here on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Hang in there for that. We are going to be heading down to Super Bowl. Looking forward to it. Getting closer and closer. A couple of weeks away from tomorrow, we head down to Atlanta, Georgia. Going down there, compliments of some of our good friends, new friends, as a matter of fact, the Brewtown Eatery and Bar. They're at 5121 West Howard Avenue. That's right there at the end of the strip mall. Big strip mall out in front, which, by the way, has a Cousin Subs in it. Good food, pizza, terrific fish fry. Your friendly corner gathering. Unless, of course, you run it friendly. They're friendly people. I was down there, saw Jill, the owner, the other day. Great people. Big hug when you walk through the door. Unless you run into one of their patrons. I think Georgie's pretty tough. They're telling me about a Georgie. Well, you don't get fights in here. It's a really good friendly bar. Unless Georgie gets rowdy. I'm like, who's Georgie? Georgie. Well, the only times we really had problems is there's Georgie. Okay? Well, how big a dude is he? No, it's a girl. She can whoop your ass. It's Georgie. Go down and just give Georgie a hug. All right? You can even go into Brewtown and give Georgie a hug. Great atmosphere, live music on Saturday night. It is all great at Brewtown Eatery and Pub. Also, tax attorney Mike Mack, proven track record for helping Wisconsin residents and business owners eliminate tax problems. The out-of-state tax resolution companies, they can't come close to what Mike Mack can do for you. He uses little-known federal laws to wipe out tax problems. Go to MikeMack.com, MikeMack.com, and see what he can do for you. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk with Paul Immig. We're also going to talk more about the topic at the top of the hour, du jour, so to speak. Who's got more pressure on him? Who has more pressure? the new head coach or Brian Gutekunst? The new head coach or Brian Gutekunst? Also, a couple of announcements regarding the Green Bay Packers coaching staff. Now, first and foremost, the guy that everybody wanted to see come back is Mike Pettine. He's going to hang out. He has been confirmed on Adam Schein's show that the Packers are going to retain Mike Pettine as the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Now, according to Alex Marvez of SiriusXM XM NFL Radio, the Packers are hiring the former Bengals special teams coach, Braden Coombs. Coombs spent the last six seasons as the Bengals' assistant for special teams. He's the son of the longtime assistant coach, Kerry Coombs. So there you go. Now you have somebody who is officially replacing Ron Zook. Things in the world have to get better, right? Sure they do. Talk more about that coming up. Hang in there. A lot more of the Bill Michaels Show on this Friday edition. Coming up right after this.
Station strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.